Hello, I'm Philippa Harris, The Lancet HIV's deputy editor, and this is the October edition of In Conversation With, our monthly podcast. Today, I'm talking to Carol Strong from the National Cheng Kung University and Stefan Ku from the Taipei City Hospital, which are both in Taiwan. Their review, published in this issue, looks at HIV and chemsex. And alongside the review, the October issue contains research on cash transfers in Brazil, lung cancer in the USA, and healthy longevity in South Africa. And we hope you enjoy the whole issue. So thank you both so much for speaking to me today. I was wondering if you could start just by explaining what chemsex is and what we know about, you know, how prevalent it is globally.
So I will start with this question. I think chemsex is one form of sexualized drug use, or it's an intentional use of psychoactive drugs to enhance sexual experience. However, chemsex has some unique points. First, it's usually associated with certain substances like crystal methamphetamine, GHB, GBL, and mefentrol. And also, it is used to describe sexualized drug use among gay bisexual men who have sex with men. And regarding the global prevalence, it really varies depending on the regions and the population assessed, and also the substance people define as chemsex in their questionnaire. For example, some questionnaires are using a broader sense, like they include like poppers in the questionnaire. Sometimes people are very specific describing using methamphetamine. So I would say overall in Europe it's 6.8% for the prevalence, and in our region, Asia Pacific region, it's vary from 5 to 30%. And if you really ask for crystal methamphetamine, it's around 3 to 22% globally.
And is that mainly in men who have sex with men, or is that in the general population, or are there sort of specific people that are involved in chemsex more than others?
I think this prevalence question or the numbers that we're using is mainly for GBS men. It's all from the studies derived from a population, GBS men population.
And what's the link between chemsex and HIV?
So there is quite a lot of public health literature talking about chemsex and HIV, because a large proportion of men engaging in chemsex and using drugs such as methamphetamine are people living with HIV. There are three possible mechanisms that can be speculated, but not yet fully confirmed. The first one is it is possible to reason that chemsex facilitates HIV transmission. So chemsex has been reported to disinhibit or impair men's decision-making, a factor that contributes to a higher likelihood of anal intercourse without a condom or biomedical protection. And the second plausible mechanism lies in individuals' risk-taking tendencies. Some people tend more likely to participate both in a drug scene and involve in condomless or biomedically unprotected sex. And the third possible mechanism is that drugs may be used by people who are diagnosed with HIV to help alleviate anxieties that they feel about living with HIV. However, we want to emphasize that even though the association between chemsex and HIV has been the subject of much investigation and speculation, given the methodological limitation inherent in the literature, it is still challenging to determine the exact mechanism. For example, we need to go beyond cross-sectional studies. We need multiple time points of measurement so that we can develop the temporal order. And we need to account for the heterogeneity of chemsex behavior, such as different types, patterns, and contexts of drug use.
And apart from, you know, the potential links between chemsex and HIV, are there other harms associated with chemsex? You know, I know that some of these drugs are injected, and also, you know, the sort of psychoactive properties of some of the drugs.
Yeah, that's a very good question. Actually, there are different categorization for chemsex-associated harms. There were people who say like physical harm, mental harm, or social legal harms. But in our review, we actually adapt Harrigan's and colleagues' idea, because we really feel that the harm should be incorporated with the harm reduction, which we're going to talk later, I think. So we actually categorize the chemsex-associated harm into HIV-related, drug per se related, and also the sexual behavior related. So as you said, like drug per se is very specific to the different substance and its characteristics. Some are central stimulants, so you might have hallucination or delusion, and some were central depressants, so people might be prone to have a cardiovascular depression if they are having overdose, for example. And meanwhile, sexual behavior related harms were usually related to, for example, STIs and also other infections.
I also want to make a note related to slamming. I think in our paper, we did talk a little bit about slamming. It's a form of injection drug use in chemsex. And it has been associated with increased risk of a few blood-borne viruses such as hepatitis C and HIV among those people who engage in slam sex compared to those who are not injecting drugs. However, we want to stress that, is it due to sharing drug injection equipment? It is still a question, because there is very limited evidence that suggests that in this population. So if it's not sharing drug injection equipment, then this may more likely be a consequence of more intense sexual encounters when slamming, such as higher number of sexual partners or sexual experience that continue for longer periods of time.
And one thing I did want to ask is, I mean, obviously you might have to ignore the kind of legal side of this, but is chemsex always problematic?
Oh, that's a very, very interesting and very good question. I would say not all substance use is problematic. And also, it's not as binary of problematic or non-problematic. So it's not really easy to cut the true conditions that people are using chemsex into these two just easily. So it's more like a continuum, like a GBSM might encounter different issues in their chemsex practice at different points in time, different life stages, or in different contexts. So I would say it's not always problematic, but it's not also as easy as that we dichotomize problematic and non-problematic. Sometimes most of people are really in between.
Yeah. Okay. And so, one thing, you briefly touched on earlier, and now I'd like to get into a bit more, is in your review, you really highlight having a harm reduction approach to chemsex. So what do you mean by that? And what are the kind of things that you think, people need to take into account?
So for a lot of substance issues, for a lot of psychiatrists or for a lot of doctors, we aim for abstinence, for intervention to stop the use completely. However, we also need to acknowledge the fact that not everyone has a motivation to stop using substance, and also it can be difficult, and also it can take a lot of time before people finally achieve abstinence. So most of the times we say people are really in between, and they are trying to decrease the use while they also continue to use substance. So it's kind of important that we start the harm reduction strategy, which focus on to reduce the chemsex-associated harm while we acknowledge the fact that people are still using that. So there are several approaches that we can do. So like there were drug-related harm reduction strategies, and also HIV or sexual behavior-related harm reduction strategies. These drug-related harm reductions should be tailored according to the drug people are using. It's mainly focusing on management of overdose and intoxication. Also, we just mentioned slam sex. So a needle and syringe program should be adopted if people are practicing slamming of crystal meth, for example. And other harm reductions were mainly focusing on decreasing HIV transmission or also other STIs. So there were pre-exposure prophylaxis and post-exposure prophylaxis against HIV infection and other STIs. Others like vaccination, preventive vaccinations against hepatitis A, B, or HPV can also be adopted. And also, very important things for people living with HIV, taking antiretroviral therapy with good adherence can achieve undetectable viral load can be also part of the harm reduction strategies.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
I just want to follow up on that. So I feel like there is one aspect that in chemsex that that has been rarely been addressed in harm reduction practices. So it's for many people who engage in chemsex, the reason for the motivation for doing it is to enhance the experience of intimacy, to help them to connect with other people, to relate in the context of sex. But this has been rarely been incorporated or discussed in harm reduction practice. So it's also not in the proposed scheme in our paper. But I do think that, so how do we help people to practice alternative ways to develop intimacy and have better sex? And what we can do as public health practitioners to increase community social support to help people to cope with loneliness will be the next important question that requires our creativity and devotion.
No, I think that's a really interesting aspect. And I think we as societies are generally not very good at talking about sex and being open and honest about it. And, you know, actually it's such an important, you know, side of sort of clinical care and public health work. Like you said, that, you know, you can talk about these things without sort of shame or judgment and really explore, you know, what people need. One thing that, you know, you've highlighted is, you know, this is a really interesting area and a sort of important area, but actually, you know, there's a lot of data that's missing. So going forward into the future, you know, where would you like to see the research priorities?
We think the first priority is that we need evidence-based harm reduction interventions that has been evaluated in terms of effectiveness, cost-effectiveness, and the process. And such intervention evaluations must attend to the possible journeys into and out of chemsex, like we said before, and recognize that for many gay, bisexual men who have sex with men, abstinence altogether is unlikely to be the principal goal for many people. And second priority following that, we also need more data on the transition between services. So what we meant are, for example, the transition from treatment in a hospital or clinical setting to community-based programs. This also has rarely been the focus of study. And thirdly, we need carefully tailored assessments of chemsex-related behaviors in the design of study, which include capturing event-level data pertaining to the combination of drug use and sex, rather than studies of global association that persist in this current field now.
And Stefan, I mean, one of the things you highlighted was that the, you know, what people are defining as chemsex in their papers often differs hugely. But it also sounds like, you know, there's a lot of inter-country sort of variability. Do you think that we need sort of a international definition of chemsex, or is it more that we just need sort of to be asking detailed questions about people's drug use and then sort of evaluating that in the context?
Yeah, I think it's always important to have somehow aligned or standardized definition if you want to compare something. But to be honest, chemsex word came from the community. So it now become more like a study, and we are, like, the research are interesting because it has something to do with health-related issues. But to be honest, it's all begin like a community-based thing. So it would be quite difficult, I would say, to, you know, unify the talk. But I think it's kind of important, and it's also it's nice that we started to have a better picture of this issue this phenomenon, and people started to gather together to talk about our thoughts on this. So it's also good to communicate with people from different countries, that because every country has their own issues, I think, and also the substance preferred use, preferably used by the community. So it's, meanwhile, it's very important that we have certain sort of common sense about chemsex and how this was practiced and how these can cause harm. Meanwhile, it has to go back to the community of each country to see what's the major problem or the major substance that people are using, and how these data we generated can be used to help to promote harm reduction in different countries. So I think this is something probably more important.
No, that's really interesting. Thank you. Sorry, Carol, did you want to add something?
Yeah, mostly just agree. And I think there are a lot of regional differences in this issue, and especially because chemsex is a very sensitive topic in terms of legal standpoint in many countries. So it could be very hard to get surveillance data or good data in some countries. But it's still important to raise awareness or have an estimation of the prevalence for chemsex.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much both for talking to us today. You know, it's a really great review, and I would really encourage everyone listening to go and read it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
So many thanks for listening, and please do read the full review, which is available on the website. If you're interested in the topic, the October issue also contains profiles of Hero in Taiwan and Mainland in the Netherlands, which are both organizations which support people engaged in chemsex. So thank you for joining us, and we'll be back next month to continue the conversation.